Yeah, I want to speak about another Bible character this morning. Just last time I was having an opening, I spoke about Samson, and that was something I wanted to do that time. This time I chose one that's a little more. I don't remember it, that it ever was talked about. This one here, as a devotional or as a lesson, but maybe there's reason for it. When I read through this book, I just felt, irregardless of disclaimer, I'm gonna do it. Tobit is a. I believe he holds a very worthy rank, you might say, with other faithful worshipers of the God of Israel. He did not defile his temple, his body, when he was in exile. He did not, even though the rest of the captivities just kind of went with the Assyrian people and they worshiped whatever gods they were worshiping, not Tobit. Tobit was true and faithful to his God. He not only did he worship like they were supposed to worship, but he also did many, many services of alms and helping the sick, feeding the poor, clothing the naked, burying the dead people of God, those that were strangled in the streets. He'd take them and bury them, and just did many, many of those very good and kind services. And so if you just take that, it's like he holds the ranks with other captives like Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, Daniel, those other, you could name a few more probably, that were faithful to their Lord even though they were in captivity. And I think Tobit is another one of those. Yet it seems like it's been a book of question for a lot of people. I'm left with only questioning it in whether it's a fiction story, and that I haven't been able to prove just 100% confidently, but I think he was a real man and it was a real happening. But still, some people question that, plus some people question whether it wasn't just the Roman Catholics kind of pushing that into their Bible. And so now you have that idea and the Protestants saying that, but the Catholics accepting it. And many other people accept it as well as part of the canon. In the past, early Anabaptists, you read the Martyr's Mirror, Apocrypha, what's called as Apocrypha, they used it readily. They used Tobit readily, and they didn't have any qualms about that. For sure, the Apocrypha, I think they used Tobit quite a lot in their stories and responses to their oppressors. You'd hear them quote Tobit. And don't know for sure about the early church where they were at with it, but as far as I know, he was in the Greek Septuagint. Anyhow, I just want to bring out some highlights, just some of the things already talked about. He wouldn't defile himself when he was in captivity. Another really beautiful thing that I found, that I thought was, it made me feel like I found a gem of old that was very, very precious to me. I wonder why chapter 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, all those chapters are all about this instance of him going to a far country. He finds a wife, and he was sent by his dad to a far country in Media to get the silver that his dad wasn't able to get anymore because travels weren't open to travels to go there. So for 20 years, this precious silver, this precious thing, was lying dormant, but he wanted his son to go fetch it. And he wanted his son also to bring back the silver and his wife, of which it happened safe and sound. Like, he brought back He sent his son out, and he acquired his wife, which is a bride, and he acquired this precious thing, gold and silver. He brought it back safely through the hand of an angel. And I just think there's such a great similarity or parallel between that and the Heavenly Father loving us here as we're in a foreign country, you know, strewn about and in foreign lands and places. And our Heavenly Father loved us so much, he sent us his Son. And his Son went out into the world, and he, through trial and tribulation and challenges, he will eventually bring back this complete, beautiful, bright to the Father up in heaven, along with the precious silver, and that's a beautiful thing to observe as we look through this story. I don't intend to read the whole thing; it's quite long, but I think I'll just read it and then make a few more of those points and then open it up. Tobit chapter 1. Tobit walked in the ways of truth and righteousness all the days of my life. And this is writing like Tobit's writing. I performed many acts of charity for my kindred and my people who had gone with me in exile to Nineveh in the land of the Assyrians. When I was in my country in the land of Israel, while I was still a young man, the whole tribe of my ancestor Naphtali deserted the house of David and Jerusalem. This city had been chosen from among all the tribes of Israel, where all the tribes of Israel should offer sacrifice, and where the temple, the dwelling of God, had been consecrated and established for all generations forever. All my kindred and our ancestral house of Naphtali sacrificed to the calf that King Jeroboam of Israel had erected in Dan and on the mountain of Galilee. But I alone went off into Jerusalem for the festivals, as it is prescribed for all Israel by an everlasting decree. I would hurry off to Jerusalem with the first fruits of the crop and the firstlings of the flock, the tithe of the cattle and the first shearings of the sheep. I would give these to the priests, the sons of Aaron, at the altar. Likewise, the tenth of the grain, wine, olive oil, pomegranates, figs, and the rest of the fruits to the sons of Levi, who minister at Jerusalem. Also, for 6 years I would save up a second tithe in money and go to distribute it in Jerusalem. A third tithe I would give to orphans and widows and to the converts who had attached themselves to Israel. I would bring it and give it to them in the third year, and we would eat it according to the ordinance decreed concerning it in the law of Moses, and according to the instructions Deborah, the father of my father, Tabuel. Deborah was his mother. For my father had died and left me as an orphan. When I became a man, I married a woman, a member of my own family, and by her I became the father of a son whom I named Tobias. Verse 10. After I was carried away captive to Assyria and became as a captive to Nineveh, every one of my kindred and my people ate the food of the Gentiles. But I kept myself from eating the food of the Gentiles, because I was minded of God with all my heart. The Most High gave me favor and good standing with Shalmaneser, and I used to buy everything he needed. I understand he was like the middleman, or like the guy that would be entrusted accounts and things for the king. Shalmaneser was the king of Assyria at that time. So just think of this man Tobit as his deeds and his good reputation was even noticed by the king, to the point that the king trusted him in this. Until his death, I used to go to Media. Until the king's death, I used to go to Media and buy for him there. While in the country of Media, I left bags of silver worth 10 talents in trust with Gabiel, the brother of Gabri. But when Shalmaneser died, and his son Sennacherib reigned in his place, the highways into Media became unsafe, and I no longer could go there. In the days of Shalmaneser, I performed many acts of charity to my kindred, those of my tribe. Remember, he was of the tribe of Naphtali. I would give my food to the hungry, my clothes to the naked, and if I saw the dead bodies of any of my people thrown out behind the wall of Nineveh, I would bury it. I also buried all whom King Sennacherib put to death when he came fleeing from Judea in those days of judgment that the king of heaven executed upon him because of his blasphemies. For in his anger he put to death many Israelites. But I would scarcely remove the bodies and bury them. Another thing about Tobit that I think is worthy to say is, well, I just wanted to note how, if you can imagine the chaos that there was in being captive and how hard it was for records to be kept straight, I guess in that way I understand why there could be discrepancy even to this day what to make out of it. But because we see, as we read here, we see just how bad it was. Like, Israel was just captive. Not only were they captive, they were being persecuted in their captivity, and all these things made it very chaotic. But I would secretly remove the bodies and bury them. So when Sennacherib looked for them, he could not find them. Then one of the Ninevites went and informed the king about me, that I was burying them. So I hid myself. But when I realized that the king knew about me, that I was being searched for to be put to death, I was afraid and ran away. Then all my property was confiscated. Nothing was left to me that was not taken into the royal treasury except my wife, Anna, and my son, Tobias. But not 40 days passed before two of Sennacherib's sons killed him, and they fled to the mountains of Ariat, and his son Esarhaddon ran after him. He appointed Aikar, the son of my brother Hananel, over all the accounts of his kingdom, and he had authority over the entire administration. Ahiker interceded for me, and I returned to Nineveh. Now Ahiker was chief cupbearer, keeper of the signet, and in charge of the administration of accounts under King Sennacherib of Assyria. He was my nephew and a close relative. Chapter 2. Then during the reign of Esarhaddon, I returned home, and my wife Anna and my son Tobias were restored to me. At our festival of Pentecost, which is the sacred festival of weeks, a good dinner was prepared for me, and I reclined to eat. When the table was set for me, and an abundance of food placed before me, I said to my son Tobias, "Go, my child, and bring whatever poor people you may find of our people among the exiles of Nineveh, who is wholeheartedly mindful of God." So this, take note how this was carefully done. Tobit sent his son Tobiah out to find not just any random person, but the person that was wholeheartedly minded after God and was one of the exiles. Like, this had to be God's people in a godly manner coming in having this feast. Symbolic to the communion that we have today, I think. "And he shall eat together with me. I will wait for you until you come back." So Tobias went to look for some poor person of our people. When he had returned, he said, "Father," and I replied, "Here I am, my child." Then he went on to say, "Look, father, one of our own people had been murdered and thrown in the marketplace, and now he lies there strangled." Then I sprang up, left the dinner before even tasting it, and removed the body from the square and laid it in one of the rooms until sunset, when I could bury it. When I returned, I washed myself and ate my food in sorrow. Then I remembered the prophecy of Amos, how he set against Bethel. Your festivals shall be turned into mourning, and all your songs into lamentation. And I wept. When the sun had set, I went and dug a grave and buried him. And my neighbors laughed and said, Is he still not afraid? He has already been hunted down to be put to death for doing this. And he ran away, yet here he is again burying the dead. That same night I washed myself and went to my courtyard and slept by the wall of the courtyard. And my face was uncovered because of the heat. I did not know that there were sparrows on the wall. Their fresh droppings fell into my eyes and produced a white film. I went to the physicians to be healed. But the more they treated me with ointments, the more my vision was obscured by the white films, until I became completely blind. For 4 years I remained unable to see. All my kindred were sorry for me, and Aiker took care of me for 2 years before I went to Elmaias. At that time also, my wife Anna earned a living on women's work. She used to send what she made to the owners, and they would pay wages to her. Seemed like very appropriate, because obviously Tobit couldn't work. He was blind. One day, the seventh of Dystrus, when she cut off a piece she had woven to send it to the owner, they paid her full wages and also gave her a young goat for meal. When she returned, the goat began to bleat. So I called her and said, Where did you get this goat? Is it surely not stolen, is it? Return it to the owner, for we have no right to eat anything stolen. But she said to me, It was given to me as a gift in addition to my wages. But I did not believe her and told her to return it to the owner. I became flushed with anger against her over this. Then she replied to me, Where are your acts of charity? Where are your righteous deeds? These things are known about you. Okay, then he goes into prayer. Then with much grief and anguish of heart I wept, and with groaning began to pray. You are righteous, O Lord, and all your deeds are just. All your ways are merciful and truth. You judge the world. And now, O Lord, remember me and look favorably upon me. Do not punish me for my sins and for my unwitting offenses. And those that my ancestors committed before you, they sinned against you and disobeyed your commandments. So you gave us over to plunder, exile, and death, to become the talk, the byword, and the object of reproach among all the nations among whom you have dispersed us. And now your many judgments are true in exacting penalty for me for my sins. For we have not kept your commandments and have not walked in ordinance with truth before you. So now deal with us as you will. Command my spirit to be taken from me, so that I may be released from the face of the earth and become dust. For it be better for me to die than to live, because I have to listen to the undeserved insults, and great is the sorrow within me. Command, O Lord, that I be released from this distress. Release me to go to the eternal home. And do not, O Lord, turn your face away from me, for it is better for me to die than to see so much distress in my life and to listen to the insults. So now the story switches to a woman named Sarah. She was of the same lineage. She also was in distress. And there was also a prayer that she gave. And they were both answered. God answered both of those prayers. On the same day in Midian, it also happened that Sarah, the daughter of Reguel, was reproached by one of his father's mates, for she had been married to seven husbands, and the wicked demons Asmodeus had killed each of them before they had been with her, as is the customary for wives. So the mate said to her, You are the one who killed your husbands. See, you have already been married to seven husbands and have been born the same to a single one of them. Why do you beat us? Because your husbands are dead? Go with me. May we see a son or a daughter of yours. On that day she was grieved in spirit and wept. When she had gone up to her father's upper room, she intended to hang herself, but she thought it over and said, neither shall they reproach my father, saying to me, you have only one beloved daughter. But she hanged herself because of her distress. And I shall bring my father in his old age down in sorrow to Hades. It is better for me not to do this, but to pray to the Lord that I may die and not listen to these reproaches anymore. At that same time, with hands stretched toward the window, she prayed and said, blessed are you, merciful Lord. Blessed is your name forever. Let all your works praise you forever. And now, Lord, I turn my face to you and raise my eyes toward you. Command that I be released from the earth and not listen to such reproaches anymore. And you, O Master, that I am innocent of any defilement with a man, and that I have not disgraced my name or the name of my father in the land of my exile. I am a father's only child. He has no other child to be his heir, and he has no close relatives or other kindred for whom I should keep myself as wife. Also, seven husbands of mine have died. Why should I still live? But if it is not pleasing to you, O Lord, take my life. Hear me in my disgrace. At that very moment, the prayers of both of them were heard in the glorious presence of God. So Raphael was sent to heal both of them. Tobit, by removing the white film of his eyes so that he might see God's light with his eyes. And Sarah, daughter of Reguel, by giving her in marriage to Tobias, son of Tobit, and by setting her free from the wicked demons. For Tobias was entitled to have her before all others who had desired to marry her. At the same time that Tobit returned from the courtyards into his house, Sarah, daughter of Raguel, came down from her upper room. Okay, so there we have a lot to think about. Both prayers get answered after they were in anguish and distress about their situation. And we can just know God hears our prayers. Chapter 4, I'm going to read it now, but I had thought about leaving it and reading it to just the boys this afternoon because it's really good advice, counsel, admonition, just from a father to his son. So I'm going to read it now because I have a bigger audience, I guess. That same day, Tobit remembered the money that he had left in trust with Gabeel at Midian, and he said to himself, now I have asked for death. Why do I not call my son Tobias and explain to him about the money before I die? And he called his son Tobias, and when he came to him, he said, my son, when I die, give me a proper burial. Honor your mother and do not abandon her all the days of her life. Do whatever pleases her. Do not grieve her in anything. Remember her, my son, because she faced many dangers for you while you were in her womb. And when she dies, bury her beside me in the same grave. Revere the Lord all your days, my son, and refuse to sin or to transgress his commandments. Live uprightly all the days of your life, and do not walk in the ways of wrongdoing. For those who act in accordance with truth will prosper in all their activities, and to all those who practice righteousness. Give alms from your possessions, and do not let your eye begrudge the gift when you make it. Do not turn your face away from anyone who is poor, and the face of God will not be turned away from you. You can see a sowing and a reaping, and you can see conditional facts here Do not turn your face away from the poor, and God will not turn his face away from you. If you have many possessions, make your gift from them in proportion. If few, do not be afraid to give according to the little you have. So you will be laying up a good treasure for yourself against the days of necessity. For almsgiving delivers from death and keeps you from going into darkness. Indeed, almsgiving for all who practice it is an excellent offering in the presence of the Most High. And I think Tobit had a right to say that, being that his life well reflected that almsgiving spirit. Beware, my son, of every kind of fornication. First of all, marry a woman from among the descendants of your ancestors. Do not marry a foreign woman who is not of your father's tribe, for we are the descendants of the prophets. Remember, my son, that Noah, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and our ancestors of old all took wives from among their kindred. They were blessed in their children, and their prosperity will inherit the land. So now, my son, love your kindred, and in your heart do not disdain your kindred, the sons and daughters of your people, by refusing to take a wife for yourself from them, for in pride there is ruin and great confusion, and in idleness there is loss and dire poverty, because idleness is the mother of famine. Do not keep over until the next day the wages of those who work for you, but pay them at once. If you serve God, you will receive payment. Watch yourself, my son, in everything you do, and discipline yourself in all your conduct. And what you hate, do not do to anyone. Golden rule. Do not drink wine to excess and get drunk. Let drunkenness get with you on your way. Give some of your food to the poor and some of your clothing to the naked. Give all your surplus as alms, and do not let your eye begrudge your giving of alms. Place your bread on the grave of the righteous, but give none to sinners. Seek advice from every wise person, and do not despise any useful counsel. At all times bless the Lord, and ask that your ways may be made straight, and that your path and plans may prosper. For none of the nations has understanding, but the Lord himself will give them good counsel. But if he chooses otherwise, he casts down to the deepest Hades. So now, my child, remember these commandments, and do not let them be erased from your heart. And now, my son, let me explain to you that I left 10 talents of silver in trust with Gabriel, son of Gabarias, at Media. Do not be afraid, my son, because you have become poor. You have great wealth if you fear God and flee from every sin and do not do what is good in the sight of the Lord your God. I'll read that again. You have great wealth if you fear God and flee from every sin and do what is right in the sight of the Lord your God. And now his son replies. Then Tobias answers his father, Tobit, I will do everything that you have commanded me, father. But how can I obtain the money from him, since he doesn't know me and I don't know him? What evidence am I to give him so that he will recognize and trust me and give me the money? Also, I don't know the road to Media and how to get there. Then Tobit answered his son, Tobias. He gave me his bond and I gave him my bond. I divided his in two. And we each have one part, and I put one with the money. And now 20 years have passed since I left the money in trust. So now, my son, find yourself a trustworthy man to go with you, and we will pay him wages until you return. But get back the money from Gabriel. So Tobias went out to find a man to go with him to Median. I think maybe that's about enough reading. It is really, really interesting. Good points. From here on, it's more drawn out, the story of how he found a man to go with him, which went with him more in the form of an angel. And it's, again, just from their bag, it's just a beautiful picture of a heavenly father. Like, Tobiah wasn't the heavenly father, but a father entrusting his son to go and redeeming a people in captivity. And it ends up being that, like, he finds his wife, a bride. And how many times are we commanded, or not really commanded, but how many times is it stated in the New Testament, like Christ as a bride? And here we have this picture from the Old Testament. Tobias going faithfully under his father's command and receiving this bride, bringing it back. And we can take courage with that. I'm going to leave it at that. I'm sure there's many things that you're thinking that you can expound on. Or
God bless you. Amen, Brother Atlee. It's a blessing to hear from the book of Tobit. And Brother Leroy read Sirach last week, and that was a blessing. Just a couple of comments. As you read, it seemed quite a, well, frequent, hey, let me die, I pray, let me die, you know, let me get out of this world. And I know that from the scriptures, Moses said the same prayer, you know, let me pray to die. And Elijah did the same thing when he fled into the cave when Ahab was chasing him. Jonah did the same thing in Nineveh. So Jonah, you know, he did the same thing. Let me die. I'm not. He said over the gourd. He was kind of crying over the shade about him. He said, well, this is too much for me to endure a little heat. And so did Tobit and Sarah. And, of course, Rachel said, let me die unless you give me children, God. And Samson, I don't know, when maybe someone correct me, when Samson said, let me die with the Philistines, did he actually think that he was going to survive and all the Philistines would die? You know, when he said that. But that's a common phrase, Brother Atlee Brenner, let me die like that. And I don't think we should ever say that. We just, I mean, let us die for the glory of God, but never to, God has a purpose in our life to be crucified with him and to bear his reproaches and things like that. And the only other comment is the word demon. And I'll make a case for the inspiration, as if I can, the inspiration of Tobit. It's the only time, Brother Brett will comment on this, but the only time demons is mentioned is in the intertestamental books. It's only mentioned in Tobit. And so when Jesus cast out demons and cast out legion or cast out a demon, and so the people who don't know about Tobit would say, well, hey, what's a demon? What's a D-E-M-O-N? What's a demon? Tobit is the connecting book between the Old and New Testament, and it is part of the Old Testament, that talks about demons. So I believe without that knowledge of demons from Tobit, I make a case that it is inspired. The Lord be magnified.
Thank you, Brother Robert. That was really good. I guess it, maybe people have heard me say this before, maybe not. I think a lot of times a lot of people will hear the words Apocrypha and immediately the things that pop in their mind is, okay, are those inspired or not? And I think that that's an important consideration, but it's not the only one. I think the most important thing is this was a Jew. Well, he wasn't a Jew. He was from the tribe of Judah. He was from the tribe of Naphtali, but he was an Israelite. So from that period of time when he wrote this, he's given us a perspective of what was going on then. And it's good insight. If nothing else, it's good insight of what was going on. If we look at the history of what the 39 books, the accepted, universally accepted books, what they say is, you know, we've got three kings. We've got King Saul, we've got King David, then we've got King Solomon. And then because King Solomon turned to idols, you know, to appease his wives, at the end of his life, God said he was going to tear the kingdom. And he split it between a northern and southern kingdom. So you got 10 tribes, and they go off and eventually settle in Samaria. And then you get the two tribes, Benjamin and Judah, that stay, you know, around Jerusalem and that region or whatever. And so So after, well, I mean, you can see in the books, First and Second Kings and First and Second Chronicles, a lot about all that's going on during the divided kingdom period. And so what you see is after the 19 kings of the northern kingdom, that it was prophesied too, that Assyria would come and take them into captivity. And what we're seeing in this book of Tobit, exactly inside look at what that's like. Just like Daniel was an inside look of what would happen later when the southern kingdom would be taken into captivity by Nebuchadnezzar into Babylon. That happened 100 years later. But this is one book, unique book, that gives us an inside look at what was going on with the northern kingdom being taken into captivity. And so that's another reason why I think it's kind of valuable. Another thing is that from what Moses taught in the law about righteous acts, I mean, I think the book of Tobit is probably the book that really shows that practically in a Israelite's life, what that looks like more than any other book, which Brother Atlee, I think, shows that really well this morning. Another thing, there's a great prayer in chapter 13, if you haven't seen it. I won't read it, but I mean, I think it's really insightful. I think there's some aspects about that I would argue are prophetic about Christ. And then in chapter 14, which, you know, there's different codices. There's three main codices of the Septuagint, and a codex comes from Latin, it just means book. Even the word Bible comes from Greek, that means book, right? So the three that we have, they're dated like the 300s and early 400s. So there's a little bit of difference with Tobit and some of the books in between those three, but not much. But I think all of them would have something like what is in chapter 14. And it describes, it talks about Nineveh. In fact, other places in the book of Tobit, it refers to Nineveh. So Nineveh was the capital city of Assyria. In fact, in chapter 14, it makes reference to Jonah, the prophet, and what he said. And then it says later on that Tobit had heard before he died in the very last verses of the last chapter that talking about, you know, Nebuchadnezzar and Babylon and all that stuff. So there's a lot of connection. So you can see on the timeline of the Old Testament where this thing fits in and stuff. So anyway, I'll just share that. One last thing I guess I'll share, appreciate what Brother Roberts shared there, is that this passage that was shared about almsgiving delivers from death, that in the letter from Polycarp to the Philippians. Now, I think a lot of us know that Polycarp was a disciple of the Apostle John. So in his letter, let's see, what is it? Is this chapter 1? I lost my place. But anyway, it's in this letter. I thought I had it. I would read it to you. But he quotes this passage from Tobit. And, you know, that almsgiving delivers to death. He's making the argument, urging the Christians in Philippi to do these good deeds to one another and all these sorts of things. And he says, for almsgiving delivers from death. That's right out of Tobit. Now, a lot of people don't know also very similar language in the Septuagint rather than the Masoretic Hebrew, still kind of sort of reads this way, that in Proverbs there's a passage that reads very similar and stuff. So I'll just leave that with you.
Also, I mean, people do, it bothers them very much, the Didache, or like Brother Brett said about almsgiving. But what about the master himself? Jesus said in Luke, okay, I'm going to say 11, something like this. He tells the Pharisees and the Sadducees, he says, do this and like that. And then he says, now give alms and all things will be made clean. So the Lord of the universe, he said it again, give alms and all things will be made clean. Lord be magnified.
Yeah, thanks for that, brother. Yeah, one last thing I'll mention, springboard off what you just said, is, maybe I've said this before, but let me just remind you that in Greek, again, the Septuagint was written in Greek, the New Testament was written in Greek, the word, or at least the root for the word that is almsgiving is the same word for mercy, mercy and compassion. So when Jesus is telling us in the Gospels, the measure of mercy, the measure of almsgiving that you give, that measure of that mercy will be, given to you. So how we treat or how we give mercy to others, Jesus is going to give mercy to us. And I don't think, I would hope you wouldn't disagree, that at least he's referring to, at a minimum, not only in this life, but also at Judgment Day. So on Judgment Day, and we see it in Matthew 25, 31 to 46. I mean, the judgment between the sheep and the goats. It's like, I was thirsty, you gave me drink. I was hungry, you gave me food. It's like the measure of almsgiving, the measure of mercy we give would be measured to us and stuff. So, same word in Greek.
Amen, yes. A lot of thought-provoking scenarios were brought up. Many of us know how that book ends. And I guess that's what I ponder and marvel at. You know, the ending was beautiful of this woman receiving young Tobit as a husband. The Lord's blessing on that. He received the money, no issues there. He traveled back to his father in peace, and they were able to administer some ointment to his eyes, and he was able to see again. And it was a good thing. And the thing that's marvelous is it's all born out of people who, not long before that, are saying, "I just want to die. It's too much. I can't handle it anymore." So that's encouraging. I find it encouraging. We've all probably been there at times in our lives, and who knows, we may be there again. So I think it's just a beautiful example of what the Lord can do as we come to the end of ourselves and allow Him to work. Work His will in our lives. A lot of faith, a lot of obedience is also interwoven through the chapter. So it's an inspiration.